This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Today's show is about asking your psychologist a question. It's our mental health clinic, and in the clinic with me, Paul Jambunathan, consultant clinical psychologist. Welcome to the show, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
I'm well. It's been a long time. I've not done the show with you for quite a long time, Paul.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a privilege to have you host it.
You know, how have you been? You've been coping well with your health and all of that.
I was pretty unwell, very, very unwell, and I'm getting better now slowly. I'm not able to deal at 100% with my clinic and my clients, but I'm able to sit at home and recover slowly, and it's working well.
Fantastic. It's just that we can't see you, so you're joining us via Zoom today. You're living in a little bubble, aren't you?
Definitely. A very thick layered bubble.
Very thick one. Okay. So today we're going to be discussing concerns. This show is about addressing your concerns regarding mental, emotional, even psychosocial issues. But today we're discussing happiness and how it affects our mental health. So if you want to text or tweet or call us to share your experience, or you want to just share your thought on what happiness is to you, call us on 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Paul, I'm going to start with you. What is happiness to you?
Oh, for starters, let me just sing a song in as what toady a voice as possible. I am happy. I am happy. I know. Do you recognize that song?
Yes, I do.
I mean, no doubt, I learned it in Sunday school kind of thing, but it's a gentle happiness song. Well, actually, it should run this way. I am happy.
Yes, so tell me.
What does happiness mean to me?
Yeah.
Well, you're asking a psychologist this. I'm going to go right into psychological mumbo jumbo and psychological jargon, which I don't want to do.
No, keep it real.
For me personally, given what I've been through, happiness for me is waking up in the morning saying, yay, because it was so bad at one stage. And I've lost my aches and pains. I've lost the tremors. I'm able to see people and meet people a lot more now. I've got a little bit more freedom. So those little things mattered a lot to me, and I'm very happy. And one of the things I think we should consider is, many people are born happy. They have as many of their needs met already. But the thing that happens is they've never met unhappiness or bad times, because I think happiness is a very relative thing. And I've learned that as life goes on, and I've learned that in my studies too. Happiness is a very relative thing, in the sense that if you've never met or dealt with unhappiness, you won't know what happiness is. Because some people have got everything in the world. They are as happy as they need to be, but they just don't know they are happy. They don't know, they don't know that word, because you don't know darkness till you see light. Yeah. You don't know other things till you don't have it, that kind of stuff. So I've lost a lot in that sense, but I've gained other things. I've gained things back as well. So I know what happiness is. And yes, I'm happy.
And based on your work, sorry, Paul, go ahead.
Sorry, and it's not a state. Sorry, it's not a stagnant state. It's not a destination. It's not like hitting the button and saying, I'm going to the sixth floor. And when you arrive there, I'm happy.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's being in the lift and knowing that you're moving in the right direction. For me, that's happiness, So things are moving in the right direction.
And knowing that you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that's a Paul Jambu, quote unquote. I didn't want to borrow anything else.
I'm going to reflect every time I step into the lift now. How would you describe, based on your work, right, how your patients or your clients who come and see you, how do they view happiness? And do you think that's one of the big reasons as to why our emotional, our mental health is not quite there? We're never satisfied. We're never happy, Paul. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, if they're presenting with issues related to the state of unhappiness, and maybe with unhappiness you have this comorbidity, called depression. I'm sad that I'm not happy, and therefore the state of being sad is what might be referred to at times as depression. Now, if they're presenting with depression, one of the reasons could be that I don't have things, I don't achieve things, I'm not in the zone, I don't have good relationships, and all these kind of things add up and your present state is described as I'm sad. We're not talking about sad. That's another issue. You know, we talk about it's not bad to be sad, and being sad is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, as I described, you won't know happiness unless you know unhappiness. What I tell a lot of my students and friends is be glad you're sad because now you know. Be glad you're angry because you know that emotion of anger and you can then move in the right direction. It's like it's a kind of a compass, a GPS. You know where you are now. And since you've punched in your location and where you want to be, now you can actually start moving. So that state is a good state to be in. So your question, coming back to your question, I deviate a lot. I'm so happy.
I know.
To be chatting with you, you know, and doing a live program with all of you. That's brilliant. Anyway, coming back to it, my clients, one of the main things is to understand why they're in the state of unhappiness. And it is such a subjective thing, Meera. My state of happiness is not the same as yours. But generally, a state of unhappiness has similar characteristics. And therefore, we have this criteria for depression. Okay. You know, there are X number of characteristics saying, yes, you're depressed, but why you're depressed and why you're not depressed, that is very subjective.
It's interesting that we don't have a guideline for happiness, do we?
No, there isn't. Yeah, we do have unconsciously. Society has it, and the economic trends have it, the politics have it, and they say that this is what happiness is, and that causes half the problem.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We have somebody who called in with a question about upbringing and socioeconomic environment.
Does our upbringing and socioeconomic environment relate to our level of happiness? Do these factors have any influence on our happiness?
There you go.
Right. Okay. There's two parts to this answer. The first part is, yes, it has a bearing on your happiness state. But according to one famous researcher, his name is Professor Martin Seligman, he's come up with a kind of a formula for happiness, but it's a very open formula. But the essential ingredients from his research suggest that the environment you live in is one of the three main issues in defining your state of happiness, your state of well-being, when you're not depressed and you're flourishing and you're thriving, okay? And yes, so the socioeconomic environment, politics and all do matter, but not as much as something else I'll get to later on when Meera and I chit-chat. I want to save that towards the end. The other part of the answer is, why do you let these affect you? Are these big things in your life? Are you following trends? Are you following Mr. Jones next door? Because he's got a bigger car, because he's going to the supermarket more often, because he's repainted his house, you are unhappy. Because one of the things I often encounter is that people are unhappy because they compare. They compare their state with other people's state. They blame external factors because they're in no position or they don't know what to bring it in and to internalize it. They always love this issue of externalizing. And they're not content. People are not content. We reach a state of happiness and we're happy today. And then we sort of get bored with it. And when you're bored with it, we want more. So we've got this constant state of moving this border higher and higher. And then you'll always be unhappy because you're never satisfied. You're not content. Why? Yeah, maybe you don't know how to be grateful yet. I'm not going to call anyone ungrateful, but you don't know how to be grateful enough or regularly enough. So yes, the answer is yes and no to that question. The yes bit will come to a bit later, Meera.
Okay. We have another question here. How should I measure happiness in my daily life?
Well, one of the things you can do is there's a lovely YouTube flick that you can refer to. It's called The Lotus of Gratitude. Please look it up, okay? Just look up The Lotus of Gratitude. Like a lotus flower, the speaker talks about how it opens up and the petals open up and how the petals open up within and it keeps on opening and opening and opening. And those many layers will take you through a gratitude exercise first thing in the morning. You can do that anytime. You can do that, you know, at 10 o'clock, at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. But start first thing in the morning and the last thing before you go to bed. And you will realize that there are so many things that you can be happy about, really, really happy about. But that's when you actually filter through all the superficial stuff and you will develop the skill of coming to the core of what determines your happiness, not everybody else's, your happiness.
You mentioned gratitude a few times already.
Do
you think that's key to recognizing happiness today?
Yes. You're grateful that your basic needs have been met, Mira. It's not my wants that matter. I can want everything in the world, but I'll never get it. And one of the biggest issues that arises that makes people unhappy is when their wants and their desires are not met. They will meet this thing, wonderful word called frustration. And then the more the frustration builds up, they will get to this other five-letter word called stress. Oh, no, six letters. Huh? Okay, a six-letter word called stress. And then that stress changes to bodily stress, relationship stress, and everything starts breaking down. Yes, so knowing that your core needs have been met. No such thing, right? Core needs. Your needs have been met. Keperluan rather than the kemahuan, you know? Your needs have been met and you have more than enough. Build on that slowly. It's okay to want more. I want more, but I'm happy I have what I need. And I can want more and lose it and not get it. But when I do get it, I'll reinforce myself and say, yes, I got what I want. Now, move on.
Okay. So, it seems like a lot of people are trying to achieve this constant state of happiness. And as you said, after a while, you get bored, right? Because you don't feel it anymore. Is this rational or is that even achievable? And how does that impact mental health?
When you try and achieve something that is not real.
Yeah, when we keep striving to want to be happy, that can also become overwhelming sometimes.
Because you'll not get to that constant level.
Yes.
Life is not like that. And that is not a formula. It's a truism. It's a fact. You're going to have traffic jams. You're going to have a storm. You're going to have failures. You're not going to get the marks you require. Your children are going to let you down. And children, your parents are going to let you down. But there will be frustrations the way.
No.
Occasionally, they will not meet your expectations.
Yeah, of course.
Expectations will never, ever, all your expectations will never, ever be met. It's a two-way street, Mira. I'm not suggesting parents will or want to let their children down and vice versa. But the thing is, to think that you're going to constantly be happy, I'd be worried clinically.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all do, right? I mean, we all hope to.
Not constantly be happy because life doesn't work that way. And if you're constantly depressed as well, life doesn't work that way because there are many moments of happiness. There are many moments of sadness. It's how you yourself are consistent in your character, in your endeavors, your motivation to want to develop and move on. So there is no such thing as a constant state of happiness. People have talked about this balanced state or the set point and set range, you know. There's no such thing. You know, the people talk about you being unhappy now, it's only momentary. Wait a little while and you go back to your happiness state. Mm-hmm. You win $1 million and you're elated, but then you wait a little while and you'll come back to your happiness state. There's no such thing, really. It's about up and down and how you adjust your little thermostat. Okay. How you adjust the foot on the pedal kind of thing.
I hate to say this, but you just described, you know, managing your weight. So my question coming up after the news, I mean, after the break is, how do you achieve sustainable happiness? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our mental health clinic where you can ask a psychologist a question. Paul Jay, consultant clinical psychologist, on Zoom with me. Happy to answer your questions. Today we're discussing happiness and how it affects your mental health. Send us a text message. It's 018-789-8899. You can call us. It's 7732900. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Please help me because I want some answers as well, Paul. I mean, how do we achieve this sustainable happiness as you described it before? Because we're always talking about weight loss and how to make sure that our health is, you know, this whatever program you're embarking on is sustainable in the long run. How do we make sure this happiness is sustainable? I mean, some of your quotes just now, I mean, what did you say? Just the happiness is about being in a lift, like being in lift and you're moving in the right direction and that is happiness, right? Yeah. You've also said you won't know happiness till you know unhappiness, right? And I think most of us know what unhappiness is.
The second quote, I think, it's not my original quote. Those are my words. But there's a quote to that effect, happiness and knowing unhappiness. it makes your happiness all the more sweeter if you've met unhappiness, something to that effect. And your question about sustainability, mm-hmm. how is any project sustainable when the people involved in it have control over it? When people who are supporting that project have control of it and it's self-propagating like that, self-reinforcing. Well, the only way your happiness is going to be sustainable, but we're not talking about constant happiness, okay? Your drive towards happiness, your process towards happiness, your being in the lift, the only way that's sustainable is if you have control over it. If you're going to externalize all your problems and not take responsibility for things that you are part of, your outcome, then you're never going to be able to sustain any level of happiness, because you're always attributing it externally. You're attributing it to the climate, to politics, to CMO, to anything, to the virus. If you attribute everything externally, you'll never be in control of anything. It's not up to you to maintain or sustain anything. So the answer would be, succinctly put, the answer would be, if you want things to be sustainable, you've got to have a say in it. You've got to have some control over it. It's your flight plan.
Okay. Joe, you have a question. Thank you for calling, Joe. How are you today?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I'm generally a positive and happy person. I mean, generally, right? However, over the past few weeks, there were a few events, both on a professional and a personal level, that has unhinged me slightly, right? So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, what are the potential interventions that I can go through, for example, to bring back this personal happiness again? You know, some of these issues were self-inflicted, some of it externally inflicted, but I think where I'm coming at is, how can people try to find, or what are the interventions people can go to try to get back to that base happiness level, you know, to help drive that mental health again?
Sure. Paul, you have any more questions for Joe?
No, perfect. Nope. Okay. Perfect.
Thank you very much, Joe. We will answer that on air. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Joe. Yeah, I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased and encouraged that you have this amount of insight. That's brilliant, Joe. Brilliant that you realize that you were in a good, very good place, and you have come unhinged, you know, in spots here and there. Your question is a very good question as to what I can do apart from psychoeducation, which means psychological education and reading up on various issues. Please indulge that. Don't let that opportunity pass you. One of the things you can do is, there is an interactive formula that describes human behavior and response. And this involves at least five factors. It is the reductionistic model, but it involves five factors. The first one are stimuli, things that stimulate your behavior and your response. Now, the stimulus could be, like you say, external and internal or self-inflicted. Then there's a cognitive process where you think things through. Then there is a behavioral response in terms of your words or writing or things, you know, hitting someone or hitting yourself, whatever. There is a behavioral response. But mediating these factors is your health, your physiology, and then a big one, your emotions, your emotional intelligence, your awareness of it. Now, these five factors play a big role in determining how someone feels, acts, and thinks. And you as a person, you will create a situation where you're happy, unhappy, and your perceptions kick in. Now, if you want possible interventions, identify at least these five factors and look at the stimulus. Is the stimulus warranted? And try and understand the stimulus. Try and think about your cognitive processes. What you've been thinking about? Have you been distorting your thinking? Aha, that brings me to a point. Something that you all can look up on the internet, Google these 10 to 15 cognitive distortions. And you'll find that every day what we do and what we think about, we often trip up in the way we think, and that causes a kind of a snowball effect and affects the rest of our lives. So, well, think about your cognitive issues. Look after your health. Sometimes if your health is amiss and not balanced properly, it can cause the way you think to be different and wrong. It can cause your responses to be different. It can cause your emotions to be different. So check your health. Make sure that your health is always good, okay? Even higher sugars, lower sugars, starving, not starving, too many drinks, not enough drinks, sleep, you know, all that kind of stuff. Have an insight into your emotions and your behavior now. To decide which intervention you want, tackle any one of these factors which you think you can succeed in. So tackle your cognitions first. Don't try and do 2 minutes at one time. Tackle your cognitions and see if they play a big role. Work on your cognitions, or work on your health, or work on your emotions. That's pretty tough. You might need professional help or a friend to help you deal with that. And of course, check your behavior. So the best thing about your behavior and your response is stop whatever you're doing. Slow down. Take it easy. You know, don't rush into any responsive behavior. So wait, work these steps out. So choose your intervention. It is subject specific. It's up to you. See what works. There is no one right, no one, what size fits all. Okay. So please remember that and keep trying. Don't give up. Not all solutions will work as quickly as you expected to. So keep moving. So this is what I suggest. Test out one of these five factors and go for it, buddy.
Thank you for that question, Joe. I mean, if you have a question for Paul G, give us a call. It's 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're talking about happiness. What is happiness to you? And, you know, if you just want to share a thought about your emotions at this point, just, you know, get in touch with us. We have a second question on mental health and whether or not it's a myth.
Why is mental health a myth in Southeast Asia?
Do you think, Paul? Do you think it's a myth in Southeast Asia?
No, I don't think it's a myth. I think I know where this person is coming from. I don't think it's a myth. I think it's, what's the word, Meera, when something is misunderstood?
Misconception.
Misconception. And it's more taboo rather than a myth and a misconception. Misconception, 100% it is. But it's coming out of the closet, if I may say so. It's coming out of the woodwork. People are beginning to realize how important it is. Now, simply put, if your brain and your brain is likened to a computer, if the computer is not working, the whole robotics below it that it manages is going to go haywire. Everything. Now, the mind is situated in this complexity of the brain and how the brain functions. So we've got to look after the brain. That's a huge neuro issue that we have to look after. And of course, when you look after that, your mind will be functioning well. So when your mind is not well or not balanced and not efficient enough to process things and information and make decisions, yeah, your life is going to go amiss. You're going to meet the criteria for all kinds of behavior that's considered abnormal and dysfunctional. So it's not a myth. Mental health is now recognized worldwide. It's a reality. But the importance of being mindful about your mental health and your behavior and emotions is of utmost importance. And people are beginning to realize that.
Okay. And to Zaidi Isham Ismail, who has texted in to say, "Hi, BFM, just want to share. I used to look down on mental illness until for 1 year ago. I had financial problems, which led me to having panic attacks and agoraphobia. Never thought it would happen to me, but it did. But I'm okay now and completed my treatment with a psychiatrist. So mental illness is very real. Try your best to stay positive," is what Zaidi is saying. Thank you for sharing that, Zaidi.
You know, one important thing Zaidi has done is not just to share his positive outcome with us, but what Zaidi, I want you to be my buddy, Zaidi. What you have done is you've told people that being on medication is not a lifelong thing. It's not bad to be on psychological medicines when and if you need it. And you're a living example. I'm a living example too. I was on antidepressants for a short while, many years ago, when I had this huge heart attack and nearly died. I was totally incapacitated. I was disabled and I needed it for a short while. So I was on it for a few months, the better part of a year, and then they weaned it off. So, you know, when your biochemistry goes wrong, your hormones, your synapses and your nerve system all start becoming dysfunctional. It just needs a little bit of retuning, rebalancing and all that, and you're fine. So Zaidi, congratulations, my friend. And guess what? You know where you've been. Your rear view mirror is working. You'll never get there again for the same reason. Brilliant, huh? Yep. Super, buddy. You're an ambassador for mental health.
Going back to the you won't know happiness till you know unhappiness, isn't it?
Gotcha, yes.
I wonder you can see Paul's face, Zaidi. I mean, he's so excited about hearing from you. So if you have a question on happiness or you want to share something, give us a call, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Nini is saying eating chocolates with reduced sugar, like more 100% of cocoa, would increase the release of endorphins. Wouldn't it increase your happiness level? Well, what do you think? So let's talk. Let's talk about using things like, you know, cocoa and whatever stimulants to actually make you happy. How is that? Is that sustainable? Does that fit into my sustainable happiness plan, Paul?
Yes, it's certainly sustainable momentarily, okay? But because it has a physiological aspect to it and it causes endorphins and et cetera, positive things to happen in your body, yes, it does. But if you look at my five-factor model that I gave you just now, that's going to be affecting your physiology, okay? And your hormones, your secretion of hormones, and you know your biochemical state is on the positive and the up and up. Brilliant. But if you take that long term and think that's a panacea for everything else, you're going to develop diabetes, my friend. Mm-hmm. That'll be a new challenge. Okay. Yeah. But with consuming chocolates and you know all this positive stuff, this stimulants, brilliant. But what does it do to your behavior? What does it do to your emotions? If you take these chocolates out, are you moving the way you want to move? Because then you become dependent on chocolates. Don't become similar to an addict or a drug addict who needs external stimulants to keep them going. So these happy foods, and happy drinks and happy stuff, happy activities, they're good for you. They definitely add to one or two of these other factors involved in your wholesome behavior. But be careful about the amount you take. Now, if you stop taking it, that'll tell you where you are. Yeah?
Okay. We have a comment from Muhammad Shani Abdullah. He says, happiness is not black and white. If we realize that life is an infinite game without an end game, then the rules are made along the way with unknown number of players. It's the same for friendship. It's the same for marriage. It's the same for business. It's the same for politics. Do our best for all is what he's saying, you know. So
I like you. I know where you're coming from. Hey, brilliant stuff.
Okay, next one coming from Anwar Roslan. Good day. I'm doing stock trading online for a few months now, but these couple of weeks I'm starting to have a headache, a real headache, especially when my stocks are going red and, you know, others are sharing 1,000% profits in social media, etc. What should I do? What? And a lot of people are in this situation, Paul, given the circumstances. This is just one example. A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people are in need of income to stay afloat. How do you cope best during a time like this?
Well, it's basically, it sounds trivial. It sounds like as though I'm minimizing things. I'm not. We have to problem solve. But before you problem solve, there's an issue called emotion-focused coping. Cope with your emotions. Let them out, cry, you know, beat yourself up if you need to. But don't do it for too long. You know, do anything you want to that helps you release your emotions, which you can see, you can feel, and other people, the main people in your life, in your environment, can see that too, because that sends a message to your support system saying, hey, this person's not feeling too good. We are here. We will be here for you and to support you. So send those messages across. Feel, release, live your emotions. You got to move on from emotion-focused to problem-focused coping. Now, treat the symptoms first is what I suggest. Symptom manage all your problems. Like if you're feeling tired, you've got a headache, try and treat it with medicines or sleep or food or whatever you think that's going to work for you. But if you feel there's an underlying problem and your headaches, despite taking the medicines, your headaches are still there and it's causing you some distress and dysfunction, then you've got to go and see a professional about it. If you can't see a friend or anyone else who can help you to identify the cause, the psychological cause, and then work things through. But I can't give you the answer to what's causing your headaches. It could be inability to complete the work, or you have no control over the work, or the targets are too big. You know, there could be so many reasons, but it has to be identified with someone who's responsive enough with you, who'll bounce things back and give you some insight, you know, a different angle to things. But treat the symptoms first. Try and manage the symptoms first. It'll give you a sense of control as well.
Okay. We're discussing happiness and how it affects your mental health with Paul Jay, consultant clinical psychologist, after the market update. I want to find out, Paul, there's a lot of encouragement always for us to stay positive and happy and to look at the brighter side of things. Mm-hmm. What does this teach us about having negative feelings is number one.
Oh, okay.
And secondly, do you think that this feeds into people becoming less resilient towards hardship or shortcomings or failures in life? So we'll come back and follow up on that question.
Sure.
If you have a comment or a question for Paul J, give us a call. It's 777-332-900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Siviso, the Paul G. Consultant Clinical Psychologist in our Health and Living segment today. It's our Ask a Psychologist show and it's our mental health clinic. So you can actually ask us anything you want to know about happiness and how it affects your mental health. Number to call, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a question from James Paul before I go on to, you know, the question I had before the break. How to be happy, this always has to come up, isn't it? When a husband and wife do not see eye to eye and have totally different values. One is materialistic, the other one is a very simple person. Talking has not helped, and I'm afraid it might lead to a divorce. How do I save the marriage and my family? And this is coming from James.
Hi, James. Sorry to know that you're in such a situation. But it's a real situation. I'm glad that you realize it's real, and I'm glad you're reaching out, you know, to get more information about it. Thank you very much for asking that question. When you say that your values are not similar, things have changed in life. Things will change. People's expectations will change. When you say you've already talked a lot, well, one of the things you must make sure you cover in your discussions with your partner is what values they have and why they have these values. And of course, expectations. Don't let expectations stay silent, okay? Silent expectations kill everything, kill anything and everything. So share your expectations as well. Now, if you say you've already spoken with your partner and you've discussed things and it's not moving, then I must say that you'll need third-party intervention, okay? You can try relatives, you can try friends, you can try everybody else. If you've tried that, then try a professional. But when and if you approach a professional, make sure there is a fit. And when you go, make sure that both of you go if you can. If your partner doesn't want to go, then you go first to make sure that you are turning every stone that you can in your powers to mend this relationship. There is hope in any relationship. And there is definitely a move towards change, okay? The change may not be what you want. The change may not be what your partner wants. But there can be change from where you are at the moment, for sure. But I was talking about fit. So when you talk to a professional, make sure that there is some fit between you and the professional, or the both of you and the professional. So it's okay if you go to one and then move on to another, and you'll find someone that you can relate with and work with. That's very, very important. Someone who doesn't have to share the same values as you, you both, but someone who is objective and professional enough to help you both come to a common ground and pursue something that's more important to both of you rather than your values and your materialism or simplicity. Okay, so consider a third party in your case. Okay. James, thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Coming back to my question about this whole idea of trying to stay positive and happy and to look at the positive side of things all the time, what does that have? What does that teach us about dealing with negativity in life, Paul?
Yeah, there is a quotation that goes like this, that resilience is the holy grail of everything, you know, of your life, being resilient. Well, I believe that to a large extent, but I disagree with that intensely when it comes to the point that we negate negative feelings and negative scenarios and outcomes. That is reality. It is part of reality where things there will be negativity around you. There will be negative feelings in you, and you can't say, I have to override this. Hello. For you to become emotionally intelligent, for you to become sensitive and to increase your awareness and well-being, you will have to realize your state of emotions, how positive they are, how negative they are. So keeping a monitor on your emotional pulse is crucial. You will always have negative emotions. I guarantee you that. and you cannot bury your negative emotions. If you do, if you find something positive to do and negate some negative emotions, then you're going to ask for troubles, because this negative bank is going to build up. And like a volcano exploding, it's going to have to find some release in the future, and it will be released. I guarantee you that. And what happens then is it'll be released not just in an emotional outburst, but it could be released in the form of a physiological disorder. You could have cancer. You could have pimples. You could have a rash. You could have sexual dysfunction. Your hair will fall out. You will lose your appetite. You will not sleep. Ah, that's how these emotions work when you bury things, when you internalize too much. So it's important that we actually work with negative feelings and understand them. We call it a paradox. We talk about resilience. We talk about positive emotions and being positive all the time. No. I would like you to be as positive as you can, but not positive all the time at the expense of burying and repressing negative emotions. No, we need to understand this. Now, some of the tips given is to understand that you have negative emotions. Totally understand it and see how it affects you. Try and change situations by not trying to control them or, you know, failing in them. Try to learn from the experience of trying to influence the situation in some way. Now let me give you an example. The virus is affecting us all, and it's causing a lot of distress to me and my family as well. However, I cannot influence it. I cannot control it. All I know is I can control my responses to it. That's what I can control. And when I know that I have control over that aspect of things and I can influence that response and that behavior, then I'm in control and I can change things as far as I'm concerned. I cannot change what the government, the policy, or what the virus is causing. So I don't give up. I influence what I can change. And that's me.
Okay.
So, Meera, I hope that sort of answers the issue about, do we negate negative emotions?
Yeah. So it goes back to you then at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, it's you, and you'll only be in control if you know enough about yourself.
Yeah. And often we don't.
Often we don't know we know enough. We know enough to be good human beings and to function properly. It's just we don't realize it. So you just need to realize that, you know, this is what's going on. So it's not that we're all unaware. We're pretty much aware, but we don't know how to use it to our benefit.
You know, Paul, I mean, I'm just going to throw this at you. You've spoken about gratitude earlier, right? And everywhere we read, people say, oh, start the morning, have, you know, gratitude before you sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Go through, you know, this gratitude. Some people have diaries and all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But given that, you know, these are some, having, you know, gratitude is just one thing, but you brought
right.
up something very important today, which is us not addressing our negative feelings.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't. We usually don't. I mean, so we focus so much on the gratitude part. I'm not sure if that's going to fix the negative feelings. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's not. So if I were to start today and say, hey, you know what? I need to slowly start addressing these negative feelings. How will I do that? How will I start?
Now, as I suggested earlier, when I was talking about one of the questions a caller gave us.
Yeah, the five areas.
No, the emotion-focused to problem-focused. So realize your emotions. Realize how negative they can be and what's causing it. Like I said, enjoy, not really enjoy, but, you know, soak yourself in those emotions. Realize what's happening to you. But move along to the problem-focused aspect of things. What am I going to do about my anger towards my wife? What can I do? Start problem-solving that. What can I do about my frustration about CMCO? You know, what can I do about my dog and its ill health or things of that nature? What can I do? But you're feeling sad and all is relevant. Now, don't forget, as positive emotions are a motivator for you, so are negative emotions. And please remember, things like fear, anger, you know, fright, and all these kind of things are motivators, and they are primary emotions to help you survive. So when you feel anger, it's because something is threatened in you. Your individuality, your pride, your safety, you know, something is threatened. And identify what's being threatened and how you can overcome that, overcome the source, the stimulus, or anything of that nature. But be aware of your emotions and then work out a problem-solving trend towards that. negative, remember this, negative emotions are as much a motivator as positive emotions. They motivate you to do things. You have to understand how you're going to use that negative emotions. And Meera, you're absolutely right. Gratitude is not a solve-all kind of problem. Yeah. It's to balance what people feel. If you're feeling really low, then gratitude might help. But why you're feeling low and the emotions and the problem solving must carry on as well.
Okay.
Please.
We have a question. I'm always told you have to find the ultimate meaning in life. But what is the correlation between my sense of meaning in life and my level of happiness? How do I stay happy if I haven't found what is this purpose in life? So that's the other thing when you read about, you know, life and happiness. That's another word that keeps coming up over and over. Purpose. How important is that?
Well, the reason why many researchers have come up with this, including Martin Seligman and a whole bunch of other people who have delved into to defining and redefining happiness and well-being. The word meaningful, this whole concept of meaningfulness, is very important. Research suggests that people who are involved in activities, as many activities as possible, that give them meaning, not give the world, gives the world a meaning, that gives you meaning apart from its materialistic value. It's important. Don't ever think that materialistic value is not right. Please, we need to make a living. You need money. You need to look good. You want to buy new clothes. Oh, fine. But what the research suggests, and I believe that to a certain extent, is that you can go on buying new clothes and feeling happy all the time. It won't be as good as being involved in activities that mean something to you.
Not sustainable.
Not sustainable. Thank you, Meera. Thank you. Something just whizzed through my mind there. Meaningful activities. And that's why people earn mega bucks in a job, but they come home not that happy. They're very happy with their 20, 30, five-figure sum of income every month. But what they do to be really happy is they earn big bucks elsewhere and they do charity on the weekends. They spend time with the family that matters to them. They do things, a lot of things that are meaningful to them. That keeps them going. The job, they hate their job, or they actually just somehow or other go through their job. You know, that's okay.
Yeah.
But you will find that if you participate or involved in activities that mean something to you, that might be the little bit of fire that keeps you going. And that's good enough.
Okay. And last question. Is the feeling of happiness in itself a good indicator of one's mental well-being? Does it mean that I'm struggling mentally if I feel sad more often than I feel happy? What do you think?
No, I don't think we should use that word happiness or sadness to define our overall state of thriving or flourishing in life. Okay. I think I'm thriving and flourishing despite whatever is happening to me, because I'm not using the state of sad. I'm feeling pretty sad about things, pretty sad about my health, pretty sad about so many other things. But that's not what's defining my overall state of happiness. You know, there might be just a teeny weeny bit too much salt in the broth. But I cannot forego the other vegetables and the nice taste of it or the gravy. And there's so many other nice things in the broth, but too much salt. That's fine. I still got food, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there are several other things that we must consider apart from just sadness or this positive state. How much control you have over things, how much autonomy you have, how much mastery you have over your primary environment, how much control you have over that, how much input you have into your personal growth, your self-development. You're not dependent externally all the time. Do you have positive relationships with other people, the people who matter? Don't be forced into liking and saying hello to a gangster because you're afraid of your own health. No. They're not people who matter so much as the people in your support system, people you support. Do you have a purpose in life? If it's to earn $1 million or $10 million by the end of this month, go for it. But work out what you can, how you can be sustainable. I love the word, Meera. I've never used sustainability in discussions of happiness before. Thank you.
Yeah, because the material wealth will kill it will have you going only for a while.
For a while. Yeah. You can't take it with you when you're gone.
Yeah.
You won't be remembered for how much money you had, what kind of a guy you were. Now, perhaps the most important thing is self-acceptance. Are you happy with yourself? Not with what you have in your bank account or not what people think of you. Are you happy with yourself? And that's an important aspect of things too. So it's not just the negative feelings or the positive feelings. It is your state of how you value yourself.
How do you know if you're happy with yourself?
No, you don't have to be chasing a state of being happy with yourself. How much do you know yourself in terms of, let me use the lift again. Do I know I'm getting into a lift? Have I control over the decision to press the right button? Now, that's knowing what you're doing, mindful about yourself, what you're doing, how you're feeling. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay. And just a comment from Leng, who says, I believe that happiness is not the destination, but more of the journey, able yes. to be happy and grateful daily. And that's coming from Leng. We ran out of time. Paul, would you have a message for us on happiness?
Yeah, please remember that happiness is a choice. So however we've described and defined happiness, happiness is a choice. It is your choice. It is your choice. So, my friends, make happiness happen. Go for it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Paul Jay, consultant, clinical psychologist in our Ask a Psychologist and a mental health clinic, speaking to us about happiness and how it affects your mental health on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.